Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. And we have the happy pleasure of talking about the offense after that win over the Chargers. Took them a while to get going, scored a bunch of points in a row, and generally took the Chargers to the woodshed. Here to join me, a great guest we're having on for the first time, Joe LaCroix, who's the producer for the morning show for 105.7, the Big Bad Morning Show, as it's known, with Rob Long, Ed Norris, and Jeremy Kahn. And Joe, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, Ken?
Pleasure to have you, my friend, and I really appreciate how well you guys have accepted me into the studio there when I come in for my visits. And I know it's a little extra pain on you in particular for me to do so with the stuff I provide that you have to make copies of, and then you have to run and get me at the door and whatnot amid a million other duties. But I want you to tell us about that. What's it like producing the morning show at 105.7?
I want to speak carefully here. I love doing it. A lot of long hours, a lot of responsibilities. But it always seems to come together in a way that I'm really proud of the product we put on the air. I don't necessarily like getting up at 4 a.m. every day, but, that's just part of the gig, but it's been, I got about a month until it'll be 7 years on that show. So, I really do love it. It's really opened up a lot of avenues for me. I've met a lot of really cool people. Getting to work with Rob Long, Ed Norris, and Jeremy Kahn is something that I really cherish, especially as I used to listen to them on the radio all the time, and then I started working with them. So that was a really cool experience to call them not only my coworkers, my friends also.
Great group of people and the nicest people you could meet. And I know everybody's got a little bit different personality. The more you work with people, the more it's possible to grate on each other. That's how those Myers-Briggs tests work. You know, under stress, this person can be, you know, but I've never, you know, experienced anything, but just a very warm atmosphere in that booth, and a great group of guys. Really enjoy talking football with them. They're very knowledgeable and very fun to hang around.
No, we love having you on, though, man. It's really, you've opened my eyes to a lot of different avenues with this game. The amount of analytics I've learned from you and having you on the show has really changed the way I look at the game.
I appreciate you, Joe. But let's stick with you here for a moment. So, we've talked about Cordell a little bit. Has made the shift, for example, from being a board guy to being an on-air guy. Is that something you're maybe looking for in the future at some point, or would consider?
So I have moments where I get to stick my foot in there. It's grown over the last few years, I'd say. I really do go back and forth with that. I really don't know. Sometimes there are points where I'd like giving my opinion, interjecting some really interesting stats and things like that in there. That is one thing I like doing, but, I do really like the support role. I like kind of being the setup man rather than the guy taking the shot.
And there are an incredible number of stories, I am assured, in terms of the stuff you filter from getting on air. I mean, there's enough funky stuff on air.
Yeah.
That you could just work from those stories, but then there's a bunch of stuff that you prevent from getting on air.
Yeah, I mean that's the dump button does get used a fair amount on my show. Never from anyone on my side of the glass. I mean, Ed, Rob, and Jeremy, consummate professionals. It's never happened. It's gotten close. There's been a few times where Ed, I thought he was going to say something, or Rob was going to say something. Mm-hmm. But the callers, it's an interesting intersection of enthusiasm and passion that comes together there. And thankfully, I've never really been truly burned by it. But there are certain points in time where I'm just smashing the dump button and getting rid of all 24 seconds of delay that we have.
Seconds, I was going to ask you.
Yeah, so it's you press it once, it's 6 seconds, and then 12, 18, 24. So I get four of them, and I mean, that's never a problem, but it's, yeah, man, I've heard some crazy stuff, even just from the people that don't, they're like, I don't want to be on air, but I just want you to tell the guys this, blah, 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 and then next thing I know, it's been 5 minutes, and they've given me 3,000 words that they want me to tell the guys.
All right, and so also you have the ability to clear the lines. I've seen other people do that, and they're very aggressive about clearing the line as soon as the person is done asking their question. They don't want to really even allow for follow-ups.
Yeah, and that's that is something that the callers don't really enjoy. It's a balance between letting them say what they need to say. And then, cause sometimes, you know, I've learned things from the callers. Sometimes they say things that are really, really smart, open up a lot of new avenues for our own conversation on the show. But I do try to explain to people, you know, you got about 30 seconds or so. And then after that, you know, you're done. I got to let you go. I mean, Rob can drop the callers. I can drop the callers. I get a lot of people that will call me back and yell at me and say they didn't get the chance to get their point across. But, you know, it's kind of like we're running this like it's Jiffy Lube. We got to get these cars in and out of here.
There you go.
Try to make sure everybody is gets a chance to be on the air, but while also allowing us to kind of guide the conversation.
Okay. All right. Well, great stuff, Joe. And it's really a pleasure to see all the elements in there. In the few minutes I'm usually in the control room before I go into the booth, and I really enjoy that. Let's shift back gears to the Ravens here. Lamar Jackson continues just an amazing set of performances on Monday Night Football. If you haven't seen, and I posted about it on Twitter, that his career passer rating now on Monday Night Football 124.3, and Josh Allen is second at 106.7. It's a really remarkable drop off. If you look at all the people who've had a couple hundred passes thrown, attempts on Monday Night Football, the whole mess of Hall of Famers are on that list for the best ever, as you would expect, because you know good teams play on Monday Night Football a lot more.
Yeah, and it's something that I keep thinking, like, oh, this run of incredible play in primetime is going to come to an end at some point, and I keep getting proven wrong. Which I'm totally fine with. I'm not, but I'm kind of like worried about when the shoe is going to drop. But I mean, you had mentioned it before, you know, people just enjoy the ride because this is something that, I mean, we've never seen it in Baltimore. We've had Joe Flacco has had amazing games in primetime. We've also seen Joe Flacco really struggle in primetime. We've seen some heartbreaking losses, but I mean, I really am trying to just enjoy this from a game to game basis of him doing things that I consistently am sitting on the couch going, wait, how did that just happen?
Right. At some point, and it's not going to be forever from now, unfortunately, he's going to be gone. And we're going to go through this withdrawal period of trying to figure out the next quarterback situation. And they might not get it right on the first time, the way they did here. I mean, the transition from Flacco to Jackson is one of the smoothest you'll ever see. And it seemed bumpy at the time. You know, Flacco got benched midseason, 4-5. And then he got hurt actually first, right before he got benched. And then Flacco comes in and Wally Pipped his job, you know, took it away from him. Wally Pipped replaced Luke Gehrig for people who are not 100 years old now. So it's one of these things that, you know, you don't often see it transfer that easily.
Yeah. And I mean, speak about how that day was. I hadn't been working at the Fan very long in the producer role. But when the news came down that they were going to start Lamar over Flacco, it was just four straight hours of what are they thinking? This is so disrespectful. I can't believe that they're like, he won us a Super Bowl. Like, this kid can hardly throw the ball. Why are they doing this? And those calls still kept coming, even when they won seven of their last eight, or was it six of the last eight?
Six of seven, yeah.
Yeah, and they didn't stop every single week. I mean, even before the playoff game against the Chargers, we still had people calling in saying, look, this moment's too big for Lamar. They need to start Joe if we want any chance of making a Super Bowl run. And I'll be honest with you, I was really on the fence about it, but I was very excited when they drafted Lamar, and I'm kind of like, all right, just throw him in there. Let's see what happens, because I didn't expect him to win most of those games at that stretch run either and even make the playoffs. So I was willing to let him go with it, but that was an interesting day. That was an interesting day at the fan, I'll tell you that.
A fantastic run there for Jackson, but we can leave that for another day. Ravens in this game really eliminated turnovers from, as they had not done in Pittsburgh. They didn't have any missed field goals. And they, you know, the things that shot themselves in the foot against the Steelers were not present, with one exception. They did have two drives stopped by penalty. Ricard and Linderbaum each had a stalled drive in this game. When you look at the penalties, what's your normal reaction to the actual TV screen when you're watching a game with penalties?
The Ricard one was, I don't know, man. I was, that was not a leg whip.
Yeah.
During the Browns game, when Lamar was tripped or I guess almost chopped, kicked.
Yes.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, that was a whip. And then they called it on Ricard. I have to admit, man, after those first two drives on Monday night, I was not feeling too good. And the Ricard one was such a, like, the type of call where you're like, this is going to be a long night of us either shooting ourselves in the foot or the refs kind of working against us, which I'm not a conspiracy theorist like some Ravens fans that think that, oh, they're all against us, but that was not great. And then the Linderbaum one really bothered me, because as a Ravens fan in the last six years, you're like, oh, all right, well, they're getting the ball back with 3 minutes left. They have a good quarterback, and it's our defense. Like, could they score two touchdowns in 3 minutes and tie this? Because could have ended the game on your own terms right there. It went from, I think it was going to be a 3rd-and-1 to a 2nd-and-14. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, man. I these holding penalties are just really rough. I think Bakari had one also,
yep.
And that was his sixth of the season. He has 10 overall. It's just, that is one thing that I think we're just going to have to deal with this team. It's, I think part of it is being undisciplined, but other times it's just, I don't think it can be fixed, honestly.
Right. If it's about getting beat, it generally can't be fixed. But the illegal downfield penalties,
yeah,
illegal formation, that kind of stuff, that should be fixable.
Yeah.
They're already pretty good about not jumping off sides. Boy, yep. Do I yearn for the days where the flags against us were a simple false start. Yes. It was a five-yard pre-snap penalty. I talk about this all the time on the show, so I don't need to say again that a post-snap penalty that's declinable, obviously much more serious.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and then I think Owe was the only had Owe had a
DOF had that negated his own sack. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's declinable, so that's really serious. On the pretty much all defensive fouls are very serious.
Yeah.
The only, I guess, 12 men is like the equivalent, because that's usually called before the play.
Yeah.
Ravens are now a substantial favorite to win the AFC North. A huge difference from last week. Tuesday I was in there, but it was kind of glum about what was going on. Can we fix it? You know, and at least we'd seen a good performance by the secondary, and we're kind of pinning our hopes on that. We have a week where the Steelers lose a game to the Browns on Thursday night in the snow. And that's just like a snow day. It's that good in terms of what you're getting. And then the Ravens win this game against the Chargers, which, no easy game at all. The Chargers, one of the better teams in the AFC. They're going to be in the playoffs for sure. They may be a team the Ravens face down the road, a heck of a win.
I was nervous going into that game on Monday. I will be honest. Especially going on the road, West Coast trip, playing in prime time, I don't think it necessarily bothers you as much as if you were playing it. I guess there's no 1 p.m. games like that, but still, I mean, if you're playing at 4 o'clock kind of situation. But to go from how bad it felt after the Steelers game to having them lose on Thursday, and then we wake up Tuesday, kind of like, you know, getting an extra life or something like that. I was pretty over the moon, but that win on Monday was key, because the run of these games towards the end of the season, other than the Giants game, because I think it's going to be pretty tough sledding, especially with 3 games in 10 days after you get back from the bye.
Yeah, that will be. I mean, all those other teams will have that same problem, but the one issue is that the Ravens play on the road in that third game on very short rest, and that's something you never want to see. You never want a Thursday road game or a Wednesday after a Saturday road game, as it is in this particular case. Fortunately, the Texans look like a shell of their former selves, so hopefully will not be difficult. They may have the 4 seed basically sealed up at that point. If that's the case, they may actually be looking to rest people, because I believe is that the second to last game of the year? I think it is.
Yeah. So you'll have Christmas Day, and then you kind of get like a mini bye leading into the final game of the season, which it looks like it's TBA right now, but it looks like that would probably be a Sunday 1 p.m. against
really
Cleveland.
Want that to be Saturday.
Yeah. That would be nice, but I can't see why the schedule makers would think, oh, well, Ravens Browns on a Saturday when kind of prime time situation, but we'll see. I have tickets to that game too. So make it on a Saturday, so I don't have to get up on Monday and go to work after the game.
There you go. Everybody's got their own selfish reasons, because that game probably played at 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
Because it might be 3, but all the AFC, and it'll probably be 4 o'clock. All the AFC games will go at 4 o'clock, I would guess, because they'll have relative playoff implications as they normally do it. All right, let's get back. The game, of course, billed as the Harbowl. We saw John and Jim go at it. A couple of things really struck me about that. I want to kind of get your opinion on this, and then talk about like some of the tenor of calls you get about John Harbaugh. But Jim, first of all, looks way old for who he is. It's very much like my brother in my relationship. He's a year younger and looks 10 years older.
Yeah.
And you can believe that. Somebody looks 10 years older than me. But John really outcoached him. Handed him his rear end in this game with the 4th-and-1 play at his own 16. We talked a little bit on air this morning, but fantastic play from an analytics perspective.
I was blown away that they actually went for it. I wasn't really paying attention at that point in time, I have to admit, to the game. And I looked over, wait, they're actually going for it? And I was listening to Mina Kimes and Dominique Foxworth talk about it today. And they were saying, can you imagine what the reaction would have been if they don't get it? And then they have Lamar not get the ball on that play and you give it to Mark Andrews. I'm very glad that's not the type of calls that I got on Tuesday morning. But really, man, that showed a different level of gall, of cojones, as you might say, for him to go on. And after that, after they got that, I think my level of belief that they could win that game went up by 30 or 40%.
Yeah. It almost seemed perfect in the sense that they kept the ball away from them. They took the ball almost the end of the half. Oh, they've only got 24 seconds left. No, they won't do anything. And then the Ravens give up a field goal anyway, which kind of sucked. But but great touchdown drive. Great play to Bateman. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, a little bit more. But let's stick with the Harbaugh decisions in this game, because the other one was the failed 2-point conversion. That would have put them up 9. They were up 7. It would have put them up 9. And I know a lot of people were probably screaming at the TV set on that one, saying, don't do it. How many, you guys got some calls on that one today?
Oh, yeah. That was the kind of one where I'm kind of like, well, we won. Like, I don't really see what the point of crying over this one is. I mean, we'll get into that a little bit later about the type of calls I get about firing Harbaugh, things like that. But I was really on the fence about that call. I like the decision to go for it. I didn't like the play call. The ball did hit Flowers in the hands when he eventually did get the ball off. But that rollout to the right, I think we saw it, was that 3 or 2 years ago where we lost the final 6 in a row, but it was like a bunch of different plays where it was rolling out to the right. You're cutting the field less like by 2/3. I just don't really get it. Then again, I don't know X's and O's as deep as some of these other guys, so maybe you could explain it to me. I don't.
I can try real quickly. Okay, yeah. So With Flacco, one of the things they've really tried to do, the first is use the Henry mesh point. And that was the big failure in the 2-point conversion the other day. The Steelers was that they didn't use a Henry mesh point that would put additional elements of misdirection and fear in the opponent. But what they try and do with Lamar, and this is why he had no interception and something like 50 touchdown passes inside the red zone to start his career, is he looks laterally he moves laterally to look for a laser he can throw directly to a player. His second choice is to throw the ball high and let a player like Mark Andrews, a taller player, get it. What he doesn't throw, what's completely out of the Ravens' arsenal, is any sort of fade routes. And that was Flacco's thing, was to throw fade routes. And then, you know, you stay in the pocket, you kind of throw it to the back of the end zone. You only your guy can catch it in theory. Then you underthrow one, it gets picked off. It's actually a low percentage, somewhat dangerous pass to throw. And Lamar's just been much better about, you know, drawing critical mass towards him, you know, creating gravity. And then behind gravity is space. And usually there's a player who can get open behind that. So I love Lamar. Anytime I see Lamar moving laterally, left, right kind of thing, moving around the pocket for an extended period, I know the play has very little chance to hold up defensively.
That's true. All right. Fair enough.
All right. So on the other side, by the way, I like that going for two, but there is a link out there if you want to look at NFL stat heads on Reddit, r/NFL stat heads. There's a discussion of the 2-point conversion on fourth and nine. I know to try and go up nine. And I know I already talked about this before, but the listeners haven't heard that one yet. I don't think so. I want to point that out.
Gotcha.
The other side of this was Jim having a really bad coaching night. And I mean a really bad coaching night. He made three decisions, which honestly were well below the line. He had a punt on fourth and six from his own 34 that was late in the game. He really needed to go for it. Decided, no, we got to punt the ball here because that's what my punt card says. And he didn't go for it on fourth and 18 near midfield with 6 minutes to go. Now you're down 14 points. Yep. Aikman immediately called him out on that. Now, I have a hunch that Troy Aikman, as though I do know he went to college, probably did not take a lot of probability and statistics courses. Just my guess. Okay.
Yeah.
And he might have taken a basic one, but it doesn't take any more than a very basic understanding to know that he should have gone for that play. And it was a great call out for a cowardly punt there.
Yeah. I don't, have you ever heard of what's something called the surrender index?
Yes, that's where cowardly punts come from. That's exactly
So they actually talked about Harbaugh's punt. It had a surrender index of 8.4, so that ranks in the 95th percentile of cowardly punts for this season and the 90th percentile of all punts since 1999.
Yep.
So,
and then the other one, do you have the fourth and sixth punt there too? Because I it was on the list there.
They did, yes. So that was a surrender index of 6.03. That's 92nd percentile for the 2024 season. And 87th percentile since 1999.
Okay, so a couple of punts where the surrender index is telling you need to go for those, and Aikman was right on it, I think, in that case, which is good to see. But then he made another huge mistake, and this is one that the card is something he probably carries around in his folder, but certainly the headset elves have it, is what's the break-even probability you need to go for 2 points when you're moving, when you're down eight, and they scored with less than a minute to go down eight. And so they had a chance to go down six by going for a 2-point conversion. They didn't do it. That's, by the way, in 30 years of an actuary, I've never had the quadratic equation come up in work, the quadratic formula.
Okay, yeah.
This is the only place the quadratic formula has ever come up for me here.
Oh my gosh.
And for people who don't remember, by the way, you will remember as soon as I say it here. Negative B plus or minus the square root of B squared minus 4AC all over 2A. So if I told the guys in the booth, I guarantee you they know it because they don't want to give me the satisfaction.
I can still remember singing it in my math class. I did not take advanced math. I think as far as I got was a quadratic.
Like two,
yeah. And I mean, that's advanced football right there. That is advanced football.
So anyway, 38%. In fact, I look at the thing and I make sure a chart is right by looking at it's 3 minutes to go and you're down by eight. Yep, 0.38. That's the right number I want to see there. And so they should have told him, but you know, John already looks like a codger, frankly, and he made a codger-esque call under that circumstance. We got some bad news today out of the Ravens. Yeah. Talk us through that.
It's Charlie Kohler. Suffered a broken arm towards the end of the third quarter, I believe, It might have been right at the beginning of the fourth quarter, but he will be out for the next 4 weeks. He did play that fourth quarter with a broken arm. So, I mean, on the toughness scale, Charlie Kohler is up there, but he's going to be missing at least the next four games. I don't know even if it's just like, oh, you're good now, get back in there. I mean, we might not see him till maybe the playoffs, depending on when or how quickly he can come back from that. But definitely a big loss. Did have one. It was that only one catch, I believe.
6 yards. It was a nice catch, yeah, nice diving catch in the middle of the field.
Yeah, and Lamar, the way Lamar avoided the sack on that play too was like another highlight reel one where I'm like, how did he just do that? I think it was against Tyre Tart was who he evaded. But that's going to be really big for the running game also. Remains to be seen. It was that Kadri Ismail's son is who would be in line to maybe take his spot.
Yeah, Kadir Ismail. And Kadri is a very proud father right now. He was all summer in terms of Kadir's play. Kadir looked really outstanding during practice, probably mm-hmm. a little less so during the games, but yeah, really outstanding at camp. And he's one of the guys that a lot of people were talking about as potentially making the team as a fourth tight end. Didn't really make a lot of sense. And the Ravens have been, I think, kind of fortunate that he hasn't been poached already with some tight end yeah. injuries that have happened around the league. He's also spent some time on IR himself this year, although they don't publicize the practice squad IR the same way they do the real IR, I'll call it.
Go ahead.
No, he's back, and as far as I know, he's available right now and not on the practice squad IR. Is that correct, Joe?
I'm pretty sure that because now this news just broke probably an hour ago or so, maybe 90 minutes ago. So, but Ken, what do you think? Like with him being on the practice squad, in theory, he should be able to kind of fit in there somewhat. Like obviously not going to be seamless, but he should be able to kind of fit in there pretty easily, right?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. Yes, first of all, he's been practicing with the team, so he should be able to do things, run patterns and whatnot. He's a converted wide receiver who became a tight mm-hmm. end, who was a quarterback at Villanova, in fact. So he's a guy who's multi-positional, but he really is not an inline tight end, despite some things we saw this summer that were just unbelievable. He was putting big guys on their back. I think David Ajabo and him had a little thing going where they were kind of on each other. I think it's Ajabo. I think he put Ajabo on his rear end, and Ajabo did not like him. And then at one point, the other outside linebackers, I won't say they came to his rescue, but they put Kadir on the ground on another play. Yeah. And Owe was walking over him like he was teabagging him. and it was just, like, you know, there's a lot of things that goes on camp you don't really necessarily get. But it's like, first of all, it's not a good look for Ajabo that Adafi Owe has to bail him out against Kadir Ismail.
Ajabo's had a rough go of it just overall, yeah. Man. And he was another healthy scratch on Monday night. So I'm excited to see what Ismail can do, though. I mean, it's a big Kohler is a kind of an unsung hero of that blocking scheme too. So I'm interested to see how that works.
Yeah, you hit it squarely on the head. And honestly, while Likely has blocked well and Andrews has blocked well, and they can put Ricard in line, they want Ricard to be free to be in the backfield or in line. And this really now limits things. It wouldn't even shock me if they went outside the organization and got a true blocking tight end that they can fit in, because I almost think they need that more than they need Ismail. And Ismail could give them a lot in terms of a receiving weapon, a guy can go get the ball over the middle of the field, can go up high to get it in the red zone. A lot of possibilities for how he can help the team. But the Ravens may decide they need another guy. Also, they don't have to add Ismail to the roster. They can keep on the practice squad. They can elevate him. Yeah. They could even go short roster for a little while, because it'll save them a little bit of money, like about we're talking really a little bit of money, like $75,000 a week cap for every week to keep a player off the roster as opposed to being on the practice squad. So that's something they might try. They've got three elevations. One thing folks may have been noticing is the Ravens are not using all their elevations on a weekly basis. They only elevated Christian Welch this last week. They actually signed Welch the 53. They elevated Tupou. That's what it was. So they only used one of their elevations. And I don't think they've used two elevations in quite some time, not since the game they elevated both Tupou and Wormley. So it's been quite a while.
And Tupou had a sack. I believe he was credited for a sack also on Monday night. So
Yeah, he did. He tripped him up in the backfield. It was kind of questionable whether it was his sack, but that's okay. There's a lot of funny things happening. I don't want to get into this. I've done it before, but the, yeah. the sack by Lamar was clearly a designed run and should have been a R0 instead of a sack zero. The Ravens had the exact same thing occur last week against Pittsburgh. And in each case, the home scorer ruled a sack for their player, which, believe me, happens more than you would like to know.
Hey, man, I got to help those guys when they go into a negotiation zone. I'd be like, hey, that's my sack right there.
There you go. So, all right. Well, I did want to ask you, you're probably not getting too many calls on Charlie Kohler would be my guess. But on Harbaugh, we talked about, you know, John and Jim.
Yeah,
it's incredible because you go to Pittsburgh, it's the same thing, but there's a very vocal minority who wants the coach fired, and they are never changing their minds. In the case of Tomlin, they made up as soon as he got eliminated in the 2010 Super Bowl. Once he lost that Super Bowl, he became crap, and they've wanted to get rid of him ever since. Yeah. And with John Harbaugh, it's like you wasted the entire career of Joe Flacco after the Super Bowl run, and then you're wasting the entire career of Lamar Jackson. It's all your fault because there's nobody else involved in any decisions within your organization.
Yeah, not at all, apparently. I mean, if you ask our callers, this is one, especially this season, because the losses have been bad. I mean, the blown lead to the Raiders, the way that the Browns game went. I mean, there weren't too many fire Harbaugh calls after the Chiefs game. I mean, you had some that were more like, oh, like he's never going to be able to beat Andy Reid. Like they should have kept Mike McDonald, which is one we get all the time. I mean, once McDonald left in the offseason, there was a lot of people that were calling to say they should have transitioned Harbaugh to a front office role and then given Mike McDonald the coaching. Like, I don't think that ever would have happened at any point in time. Because if Harbaugh's gone, like I think he's gone. I don't know if he'd be able to be that close to the team and not have it. He would just have too much input on the team.
Yeah, I think one of the things that was talked about was having a succession plan for McDonald.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it might be 3 years and then he takes it over kind of thing. And with Ozzie Newsome and Eric DaCosta, that made perfect sense because those guys have sit like literally right next to each other for the last 25 years and made picks and they've deep in each other's thoughts on that kind of thing. And while I don't know, I can't really speak to how Ozzie felt about this, but Ozzie's been a remarkably successful human being at literally every level he's played or done anything else. And for him to pass the torch to EDC at some point, I think it's almost like a victory lap for him. And not only that, he had the 2018 draft on the way out the door, which is, you know, the greatest in NFL history and by some people's reckoning of the thing. And then he, you know, he handed the keys to DaCosta, and he still sits right next to him as some sort of very highly paid scout. Cause I think Bisciotti probably didn't cut his salary to have him retain, you know, stay in that role. And, you know, there is no outward appearance that the presence of Ozzie is making it difficult for DaCosta.
Yeah. Working in this industry, you do kind of get to hear some behind the scenes things. I mean, I've never ever heard anything ever once about DaCosta feeling like Ozzie stepping on his toes, or that is something that doesn't seem true at any point to me. When it comes to DaCosta, we hardly ever will get calls from people saying that he doesn't know what he's doing. There might be calls questioning some of the trades or accumulating draft picks instead of making trades. Mm-hmm. But he is kind of almost untouchable. I mean, it's to compare it to like the Orioles, it's kind of like Mike Elias kind of has the same thing that Eric DaCosta does, where it's like, let him do his job. He's done so well in the past that he's built and building up so much goodwill, you can't really question him. Maybe that's why John takes so much heat, because people will call him the CEO of the team. And that's been something we've been talking about a lot. We get a lot of people say, like, what does John Harbaugh even do? Like, he doesn't know X's and O's. He was a special teams coach. Like,
he's so untrue, by the way, if you ever heard John Harbaugh speak.
I'm telling you, man, There's probably nothing more that frustrates me than that statement that he doesn't know X's and O's. When I have people calling me that they stopped playing football in like eighth grade or something like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, this, the constant calls of the last 18 months for firing Harbaugh, they have grown a lot louder. And especially playing Jim this past week, we did a segment on, would you trade Jim Harbaugh for John Harbaugh? And the amount of people that called in and said, I would take Jim over John in a heartbeat, I was pretty surprised by.
Complete dipshits. You can say that on the show, by the way. I mean, you don't have to hit the dump button.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we're good on that. But and then we also did, like, would you trade Mike Tomlin for John Harbaugh? And that one was almost unilaterally would trade Mike Tomlin for John Harbaugh. The thought is that Tomlin wouldn't waste Lamar's best years in the same way that Harbaugh would. So
he literally would take Lamar off the field on 4th and 1, 4th and 2, the way he's done with everybody else, probably. But or he might adjust. So Tom, there's nothing wrong with Tomlin. He's been a fine coach. Both these guys are going to be Hall of Famers at some point. But the notion that Tomlin is considered better than Harbaugh is just, it's not. I don't think there's any good backup in terms of facts. You could say they're roughly equivalent. I wouldn't have a problem with that. If somebody thinks, I think Tomlin's 5-10% better, no problem. But Harbaugh's way ahead of Tomlin in some characteristics. And the Steelers also, the Steelers fans will tell you this, they've had a really hard problem hiring good assistant coaches across the board within that organization.
Bingo,
and not a problem for the Ravens.
And that's something that when we did the Tomlin and Harbaugh trade scenario, I mean, I brought it up on air. I know Rob and Jeremy had both brought it up on air. They haven't won a playoff game in a decade or close to a decade. And it's
2014. So it's,
And I have friends that are Steelers fans that are growing just as frustrated with Mike Tomlin as Ravens fans are growing with John Harbaugh. So take that with it. Ravens fans don't want to hear that, but it is what it is.
Right. Actually, it's actually 2016. I think he won the game because 2014, the Ravens actually went into Pittsburgh and beat them for the first time ever. So, all right. We got to move on with some other elements of the defense here. Ravens tied the snap count 60-60. You mentioned your kind of nadir of expectation in this game after those first two Chargers drives and they're down 10-0, or maybe it's actually the third, whichever drive it was where they got down 10-0, but it did not look. I mean, they were getting seriously outsnapped in the game. They couldn't convert first downs. They're having penalties early that ruined drives. But they ended up tying the snap count 60-60 with a very dominant second half performance. A lot of good things, a lot of hyper efficient things about this offense. Just going to talk through a few of them, then we'll talk a little bit about it. But they're 11 of 15 on 3rd and 4th down. Now, a lot of people just have a 3rd down number, and that's 8 of 15. But they were 3 of 3 on 4th down, which essentially just add that 3 to the 8 because it's 15 total opportunities to solve that problem in 2 downs.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
And they got 11 of 15 converted there. 73% is outstanding. 6.5 yards per play is a little lower than their season average, but that's still very good, particularly when you run the ball as much as the Ravens did. They went 2 of 2 in the red zone, 2 of 2 in goal to goes. They lead the red zone percentage in the NFL by an incredible wide margin. They're at 78.7%, and the next highest team is Tampa Bay now, who's in the 69% range. So we're really talking about a team that knows how to punch it into the end zone when they get there. No turnovers, of course. And the Ravens now lead the NFL in also in series success rate. So that's every time you get a new series of downs, what percentage ends in a first down or a touchdown? 78% of all series for that. And normally, 78% will typically lead the NFL. The year that the 2019 year, the Ravens did not quite lead the NFL in that. The Chiefs were, I think, at 80%.
I was pretty blown away, though, when I saw that red zone touchdown rate. I did not realize it was nearly 80%. Yeah. That one, that one's pretty wild. And the other aspect of that game, though, at one point, Lamar was 1 for 5 for 2 yards. Yep. And he finishes the game 16 for 22. I will admit at certain points, like he overthrew Flowers on a really high ball. That one was not a good look. And especially he'd done that a couple times against Pittsburgh where maybe he just wasn't setting his feet. That also had some people saying, well, like, is he injured? Can he not plant and throw the same way? But I was really, really blown away by looking at Lamar's final stat line. It's not gaudy, but once you realize how bad it was in the first few drives and how he ended it, I was like that again. That's just another kind of thing that makes me shake my head at just how good this dude is.
Over the last three quarters or so, it was 15 of 17, 175 yards, so over 10 yards per play, and 2 touchdowns with obviously no interceptions in the whole game. Rolled up as that Monday Night Football record of 22-0 touchdowns, interceptions. It's just we're in another galaxy here. I don't know that any quarterback has ever got to a season at 22-0. You look at be something like Brady in 2007, or maybe somebody else did it, but I don't know that's ever happened. I think you can get that now on like Streak Finder or Span Finder. Might be able to find that on Stathead. So I might bring that up a little later. One question I have about you, because this speaks to the playoffs. The Ravens so far have had pretty good weather to play in this year. They haven't really had a horrible wind game. Well, they did kind of have a bad wind game in Cleveland, I guess it was.
Yeah.
But they haven't. That's a kind of the enemy of Lamar in some ways, and they haven't really had a bad rain game. They certainly haven't had snow yet. Is this something the Ravens need to be worried about with Lamar, who's generally had better success when the weather is better?
So I tried to find more information on this, and I'm not exactly sure if the article I found is accurate or not, but the numbers I found for Lamar in games that are played in less than 40 degree weather, and that again, that's just temperature, but he has 109.3 passer rating and averages 2.5 TDs a game. So the article was from October 30th, 2024. I'll have to try to find, pull it up again and find who the author was, but I was kind of blown away. If that's what it is, Mahomes has slightly better stats in less than 40 degree weather, but I mean, that's just the temperature. That doesn't really tell the whole story. Personally, I don't really think he's only a warm weather quarterback. I don't think he's like Tua Tagovailoa, who's splits between bad weather, cold weather, and warm weather are like night and day. But it's already looking like, you know, if we're going to make a Super Bowl run, you're going to be going to Kansas City or Buffalo. So it is something you need to worry about. I do think this offense, maybe even a little bit more than the one in 2019, kind of lends itself more to cold weather than past years.
Great point.
Especially because, I mean, 2019 was an aberration to some degree because it was that playoff game. It was like 75 degrees and cloudy. And then the Buffalo game, I don't even know what happened in that Buffalo playoff game. That was
they lost it. That was the Teron Johnson interception. Clear. They didn't have snow that night, but it was I think it might have been windy and cold.
Yeah, it was. I remember being bitterly cold, but I'm not sure. I'll have to look into that a little bit more and if those numbers are right or not. But
you actually just brought a lot to the table here because I'm kind of talking him out of my rear end, you know, having seen him throw poorly in wind before. And one of the games was that 2019 playoff game. People don't realize that we were walking to the stadium from our parking garage and the wind is just whipping around the buildings. And then one of the early plays is the ball is off Andrew's hands a little bit intercepted and by Byard, I think. And then the Titans were off to the races. It makes me feel a lot better what you said about the 109.4 rating under 40 degrees. That hopefully is a good one that can carry him through in this playoff series.
Hopefully.
let's see, what do I want to talk about? You know, this is a game where Lamar had a high A dot again. And also, even though he had a low passing yards, he did not benefit from a lot of yak in this game. So first of all, we want yak. That's a good thing. But some yak is from behind the line of scrimmage, throw a screen pass. Justice Hill actually has more yak this year than he has yards receiving, which is kind of unusual, but does happen with running backs. I think it's about 312 receiving yards and 335 yak, which means he's getting the ball typically behind the line of scrimmage. Ray Rice did that for an entire season or two. But when he throws the ball down the field and there's not a lot of yak on the play, you really notice that he ended up 35% was a season low for yak as a percentage of total receiving yards. And that fits pretty well with the season high 11.4 A dot. So he's throwing the ball downfield, having some completed, in particular the throw to Bateman in the end zone and the sideline throw to Flowers for what, 22 yards or something, were big plays that didn't have any yak tack on. And I thought that's a nice evolution. Whenever you can have a game where you don't need to depend on Isaiah Likely making a move and going 40 yards, that's probably a good thing. But it's also like when you can get him, fantastic. You take him, you don't put him away. The receivers had zero missed tackles forced in this game, which is kind of a bad thing because this is a Chargers team that didn't tackle very well coming in. And that was an area I was really expecting the Ravens to dominate. That didn't happen.
Yeah. Especially with, they had a screen pass to Flowers that didn't, I think it was maybe like a gain of four at one point. But I don't. It's interesting when you break down his throws through this game. Just a lot of weird, kind of, you know. You had the Flowers catch. You had the Bateman. The other pass that was to Bateman in the end zone. That was, you could call it a drop. I don't really know if it was called a drop or not. That was another play when they broke it down during the game. It was either Bateman had more space if he turns left and goes towards the pylon instead of turns back in and towards the safety, he's open right there. So I will say it seemed like sometimes I think Lamar and Bateman, everyone says there's some disconnect between them. I don't really agree with that, but it is nice that Bateman doesn't make that play. Lamar still goes back to him and he not only makes the play, but that was the game. The game turned on that one, I feel like.
I thought this was absolutely a monumental game for the Lamar Bateman trust relationship. I thought this is a milestone marker for him to throw the ball up to him twice in the end zone. Now, circumstances were ideal for it because Fulton, the right cornerback for them, is a guy who is like Brandon Stevens, doesn't really ever turn and find the football. He plays the hands of the receiver. And it puts him in a good point. But Bateman did a great job of not giving away his hands early on those plays. And you know, the second one, there's no way it should have gotten through from a touchdown, but he basically was hands to his side pretty much the whole way. And then all of a sudden he reaches out and he grabs the football. And the other one, you know, could he have had it? Yeah, he could have had it. Fulton didn't PD the ball or anything, but it was a contested catch. And when you make two out of three contested catches like that in the game, because the third one was Andrew's touchdown and you get two touchdowns, you don't have any complaints to make. It was outstanding, play. And what I loved about the other one that he got against Fulton, the one that was the 40-yard touchdown, is he played right through a DPI on the play. So, normally you play tabletop football, you can't even decline a DPI penalty. If you roll one and then you roll a completion after that, you're not, you can't decline that. But in this game, that's really special when you can work right through that.
Definitely. And it was impressive, though, recognition almost just from the jump. Lamar knew that he had single coverage on him, and he was like, all right, just if that's the trust thing you go back to. He knows that he's not just going to give up on the play. He's going to keep pushing it downfield. It was, I've wanted them to, both of them to succeed together. Because I thought, all right, we got Rashad Bateman first round. He's going to break the curse of first round picks for this team. He's going to be Lamar's guy. And I don't think Bateman's stats aren't gaudy in the sense of yardage, but I mean, He's starting to look like he belongs more when I think a lot of people were writing him off after last season.
Well, he's had a very good year, and the thing that I would point to, let me get right to it here. So Bateman has 10.5 yards per target right now.
That's pretty good.
And that is up there with the highest all time for the Ravens. Andrews is the highest ever at 11.04 in his rookie year.
Okay.
But Bateman has 10.5. I mean, this is a really great season he's having. And, you know, Lamar's having a great season too, but Bateman has become a great receiver. In fact, his contract right now, I've had this discussion several times on air. I think it's one of the most valuable current remaining year's contract, certainly for anybody who's not on the rookie deal anymore.
Yeah, I actually wrote that down in the notes here. I was like, one of the best contracts, that one of the best signings that we've made in the last couple of years in terms of the value that you're getting for it?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you're looking at it in terms of surplus value then relative to what his market value would otherwise be. And that's enormous right now. It's if you want to trade Bateman, he's the one receiver in the NFL who's not a first year player, not Zay Flowers, maybe, who you could trade for a first round pick, but a second contract receiver that you could trade for a first round pick, which is incredibly, it just doesn't happen. Davante Adams got traded and, you know, it was a third conditional to a second, which is not going to be collected on, you know, it doesn't happen, but that's a great point. I'm glad you had that. So you were worried about coming on this show that it was going to be too technical or something. Not
hey,
at all.
Man. Now it's funny the things you kind of just pick up in passing, just get it preparing for the show every day, that's one thing I do have to do is help. We all kind of collaborate and put the show together. It's watching a lot of different things, different people. So you do pick up on a lot of things. And then also, like I said, when we started out learning from you, it's like, go to advanced the stats and statistics, things like that, NFL stats and stuff like that. So I think I'm learning.
All right. Very cool. Let's talk Lamar a little bit. We mentioned his only sack. I think it was BS, though. I think the Ravens will fight it. Yeah. And this week they probably won't win it because they didn't win it last week. I don't think the NFL wants to be inconsistent in how they change these things. That's what's unfortunate about this. But that wasn't a sack. That was a design run. If you look at Falele and McCary, were both like 6 or 7 yards downfield blocking on that play, which tells you if Lamar had tried to throw a pass, it would have been a penalty. so it was very obvious from their release immediately that they expected a run, and they were looking for fresh meat out there in level two to block. Not a great running game for Lamar. He only had one significant run, but it was a doozy. That was a 10-yard run, leaving the pocket to the right side. Thoughts on that play?
That was, immediately, obviously, he did the hesitation right at the goal line, try to get, I think, was that Derwin James that was trying to chase him down on that one, I think? I think he's zero.
Derwin is number three. I'll look it up, but go ahead.
Okay. But regardless, and then that's just another Lamar being Lamar. And the move up in the pocket, not see anything, bounce back, go around, you got a solid block. You know, the Lamar's, I don't know if it's unwillingness or not, that of not to run of the last 6 weeks or so has made some people question, like, is something wrong? But I don't know, man. He looks fine to me. I don't think it's anything related to him not wanting to run the ball because he's hurt. I just think that he wants to make big plays. We can get into that a little bit later. But overall, that play, I mean, right afterwards, you saw the comparison between that move that he did when he was in high school, when he stopped on the goal line and let that guy go past. And that's another classic. Just put it in the highlight reel. I'm sure we'll be seeing that one in montages for the rest of history for the NFL.
Yeah, it's one of the really good things. Lamar has a couple touchdowns like that. One where he kind of just the last yard or two is almost effortless for him.
Yeah,
he had a touchdown like that against the Chiefs, where it's a turn and there's no stopping it. Dyan Henley, number zero for the Chargers, there was there at the goal line. I'll refer people to the article for the pass rush by numbers. That'll be out there tomorrow. Okay, you're listening to this probably the same day that it is coming out. But Maureen and I have to put that together today before we get into Thanksgiving here in terms of the offensive line scoring and whatnot. But it was a game where the Chargers, the highlight is that they used a fair amount of blitzes in this. When I say blitzes in this case, I'm talking about 5+ rushing the quarterback, 10 out of 23, 43%. That required the Ravens to use a lot of set and chip blockers again in this game, but they really were rewarded for it because both tackles ended up scoring quite well, which we'll get into in the second part of the show.
Yeah, I mean, and once again, let's give a game ball to Justice Hill, because some of those blitz pickups, especially on the pass to Andrews for the touchdown, I mean, he took out that blitzer there. Think it was the Steelers game, where I think that was Hill was, whichever one he thought he might be out with concussion. I was thinking to myself, if he misses time, I think Lamar's in trouble, because there's probably 9 or 10 different times this season where I've seen Hill pick up a blitzer to either spring Lamar for a big play or it's for a touchdown. So, I mean, I was pleasantly surprised with the way that the offensive line played overall. Obviously, the penalties are something that we kind of got to live with. But again, I really don't have any problems with them. I think there was one ineligible man downfield call.
Not in this game, but we'll get into a lot of detail on the offensive line, the second part of the show. So I don't want to jumpstart this too much. I do want to talk a little bit about all the time Lamar had, which is just relating Lamar's time in the pocket to how successful he was. He had 9 ample time and space opportunities, and there were only 7 pressures. First of all, if you're a defense, you probably want that number to be 1.5 pressures per 1 ample time and space opportunity. You really want to reduce those. 9-7 is fantastic results for an offensive line in terms of getting – and they really had very little pressure the entire night. The sack, as I mentioned, complete crap. I've scored it that way, but I don't think it should hold up. I think it should be changed. But they got the 9 ample time and space opportunities. Lamar only went 5 for 9. He had 4 incompletes, but it was for 105 yards, so 11.7 yards per play. That's even better than expectation. 7 ball out quicks. He was just about average, 6 out of 7, 41 yards, 5.9 yards per play. About 6.0 yards per play is what you should pick up on a ball out quick opportunity. And then he was pressured 7 times, which is only 30%. So that's pretty good for the offensive line. And he was 6 of 7 for 31 yards on those plays. At 4.4 yards per play, doesn't seem like much. It's actually above expectation for being under pressure. So in all, Lamar outperformed his opportunity set by about 34 yards, and that's 1.5 yards above expectation per pass play. So 34 yards is not an insignificant number. The 1.5 yards per pass play, because he threw so few times in this game, is really exceptional. You take out that sack 0, which was complete crap. It was really run play. Like I said, 5 times before, it's 1.7 yards per play. That is a lot to be better than kind of the standard for this thing. And another great game for Lamar.
Obviously the play didn't count because there was a penalty on Ricard, but what would that have been scored at? Like, would you have called that a pressure? Or, I mean,
that is a really good question. Let me see if I've got anything in the notes about it. Cause normally when we have a penalty, we do not score that play otherwise. So,
because I know that was an extended play. But I guess I was wondering, I don't mean to put you on the spot there.
No problem.
That was pretty, again, I'm running out of time, running out of things to say about the things that he does. And especially the last 2 years or so, where it's almost like he somehow continues to outperform what he's done the week before. But if we can keep it rolling, he doesn't even necessarily need to be A-plus Lamar every single game, because we have guys like Derrick Henry. And, I mean, hopefully Keaton Mitchell could get more involved in the future. But, again, this is just another one that I think is MVP worthy. Hopefully other people see it that way. But
if he is injured somehow, and that's has some part in the reduced runs, and of course he's missed a lot of practice time, you know, 5-6 days of total practice he's sat out with you know, rest, back, neck, and it's usually, I mean, back and neck are scary injuries, you know, when you're talking about a, you know, variety of things like this. But I think it's possible there's an injury involved. The Ravens are doing a great job of not letting it be known what that is. And so the value of that from my perspective is that the Lamar Henry mesh point remains the greatest weapon in the NFL right now. And it's still a real threat that Lamar is going to run, even though he hasn't as much recently. And it seems like even though he's still doing some running in this game, he ran the ball, what, 8 or 9 times for 15 yards?
Yes, 8. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry. I was just going to say, though, I heard this from a few people. This is a call that we get a lot. They're hiding an injury. Lamar is scared to run, and this was huge after the Pittsburgh game because there was a lot of different points in time where it's like, all right, just go. Just you have space in front of you. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to feel, though, that he is trying too hard to push the ball down the field or to make a big play. And it's something that I've watched NFL Live every day. It's something that Dan Orlovsky brought up. It's something Mina Kimes had brought up. It's like he's focused on putting it 20, 25 yards down the field. And I believe he's top three or top two in the league in 20-plus yard passing plays down the field this year. But there are opportunities even just that aren't even just running, that there are underneath routes that are open. It's almost like he's just trying too hard to play hero ball. And that's something that even started during the AFC Championship game. I mean, we've broken down that game way too many times at this point, mm-hmm. but it's whether it was you had Bateman open on the play to Zay Flowers. You're like, it happened during the Steelers game too. There were multiple points in time where he forced a ball to Zay and you had Bateman on the other side of the field that was open. So I don't know. I don't believe that if there is an injury, it's something that's stopping him from playing his game. Maybe it's more of a mindset thing. And considering how good the offense has been playing over the course of the entire season, I get what he's trying to do, but sometimes I wish he would just take what the defense is giving you.
Yeah. I do think, by the way, the last statement you made is something he's been absolutely excellent at doing pre-snap this year. He's been walking around, readjusting people, taking the offense as his own, and you know, switching from run to pass play, where they have the double calls that are very efficiently, very effectively, and basically looking at the numbers in the box, how the defense is aligned and making the most out of it. I do think there's something to be said about ebb and flow in his career between wanting to be, you know, recognized as a runner, recognized as a passer. It's not even that. It's more like what's his first thought of what he does. And when he came up 2018, he took off all the time. I mean, he ran, you know, too much. He ran 27 times in his first NFL game, which was the most anybody had since I think 1953 in the NFL. So any quarterback. And then he still kept running all that year. 2019, he had a ton of carries, and even though they were good about, you know, having a pistol they ran out of, so he became an outside threat. You moved to the sideline, still running too much. He's definitely evolved as a guy who knows how dangerous he is throwing the ball. And there's something about this that reminds me a little bit of Brady Anderson years ago. Brady Anderson had a you know, decent on-base percentage.
Yeah.
Drew a good number of walks, but got hit by the pitch a lot. And Brooks Robinson once said something I thought was right on the money. He says, it's almost like Brady feels like a hit by pitch is more valuable than a walk. And it was completely true. It's like he's leaning into pitches. He's trying to get hit by the ball. And they didn't even have all the great equipment that they have now to protect you from that kind of stuff when Brady was getting hit by the ball. I think there might be something to that Lamar somehow sees there to be more value from a 20-yard throw than from a 20-yard run. But also, let's take a look at what he's done on extended throws with this group of receivers. He's done a fantastic job of spreading the football out, not having one target, not having it just be Mark Andrews. And I've really appreciated the evolution of his game in general.
We were talking about it today during the show. You never really hear the comments against Lamar's game in the same way that you did maybe even at the beginning of last season. I think that everyone's given up on saying that he can't throw the ball as well as the best quarterbacks in the league. I mean, that is an evolution that I like, because I don't have to get calls anymore and say, why is this running back throwing the ball? It's gotten so good that even like it wasn't something that I ever thought that he could evolve to this level. Now, like, it's kind of just more about what's going on between the ears than what he can do on the field. It's the physical attributes are there. He can make every throw. I think even his deep ball has gotten a lot better this year too, where the previous 2 years probably had the most thrown deep balls, but just the catch percentage was really, really low. I think now he's at least understanding that I mean, maybe like you said, he sees more value in a 20-yard pass than a 20-yard run, but I also think he does see the value in of a 20-yard pass rather than a 45-yard pass or a 55-yard bomb to try to go for it all right there.
Okay. All right. Well, I think, you know, when you it's easy for anybody, I think fans, to project their feelings onto who Lamar ought to be as a quarterback. I think this really is another enjoy the ride situation. I mean, Lamar has out-surprised, been better in so many ways than we could have ever expected. The one thing that I'm remarkably happy to be wrong about is I looked at the 2019 season, which is one of the greatest outlier seasons in the history of the National Football League. It's one of the greatest ever put together. It's done by a 22-year-old. And there's a whole bunch of people basically saying on Twitter, and he's only going to get better. And there are things about his game that certainly did get better, but the league also caught up to a lot of who he was and figured out ways to defend him, drafted players in the division to defend him. Yep. And it did make things harder for Lamar. And, you know, it's incredibly, he's actually found something to exceed that 2019 season. I believe this year he probably is going to finish with a better season, which to me is just, it breaks the odds makers have taken such a beating on that. It's unbelievable. I honestly can't believe that people think that Josh Allen is the front runner for the MVP at this point, but that's the way the odds look right now.
I saw a graphic today. It was a Fox Sports posted it. It didn't say which sports book they got these from. I didn't think Fox had their own, but this graphic has Josh Allen at +150 and Lamar at +250. Lamar was +400, I think, or something like that last week. So he's narrowing the gap. But I mean, if you do a side-by-side comparison of all the major passing stats between Lamar and even some of the rushing stats, I mean, Allen has more rushing touchdowns, and I think it might be close for at least rushing yards, but it's not, to me, it's not even close. But it does kind of help. It does make you think, though, how much does the team's overall record play in to who wins the MVP? Last year, people kind of questioned why Lamar won it, but they were 13-4. And they said, well, the only reason he won is because his team was winning so much. But I don't know. I do understand why the voters might think we've already given it to him twice. Allen hasn't won it before, despite past good seasons. And if they finish, 14-3 or 13-4, I could see him winning it, but I wouldn't agree with the decision.
Right. And I'm in the same boat. And I think some of the reasons you cite there are very good. So I don't want to belabor that. Let's jump on a couple more scheme things. And we're running a little bit late on this episode, but really appreciate the conversation, Joe. We'll run a little long here. Talk a little bit about running back snap division, because we are not seeing RB3 snaps for this team at all. Mitchell's just had a handful of snaps since he returned. Collier had three. Ali's never gotten on the field for the team. So it was Hill 26 and Mitchell 39 in this game. No Pony backfield shown at all. Really, really want to see Mitchell used in some of the ways that they're currently using Deontay Johnson would be my feeling about it. So I would really like to see that.
especially, I mean, the Deontay Johnson, that's – I mean, I don't even know what to say about that. With Hill's, the disparity though with Hill though that kind of worries me is the carries compared to how many times he's on the field where he's in a receiving or a blocking. It's almost like, well, Justice Hill's in the game, they're going to throw. So it hasn't really bit them yet, but it does kind of make me think it's like when Lamar would have a towel on. Lamar had the towel at his waistband and he'd wipe off his hands. It means he was going to throw. Like it was that kind of thing a few years ago, but. I can't complain that much because they keep winning and everything, that the execution is so good. So,
okay. So, I think there is some down and distance stuff that Hill is typically in there. So they don't have Henry typically in on a 3rd-and-9 play, for example, even though Henry is a perfectly good pass blocker, outstanding pass blocker, in fact, and they could use him that way. They need to find some snaps that Hill can take away. And I think that is one of the real questions I have is do they need to reduce Henry's workload at some point before the playoffs? Now, I'm really appreciating the fact, I'm probably going to get crucified for this, but the fact that he's not on 2,000-yard pace anymore, and it doesn't appear like that's going to be a big deal. I certainly hope they don't try and get him the rushing title over Saquon at the expense of having a tired guy in the playoffs.
Nope.
Yeah, that would totally be bad. Agree. Totally agree with that. I want to talk about the heavy formations we're seeing from the Ravens because they returned in this game. And you expect that because this is a heavy run script game playing against a Chargers team that has a lot of tackling problems. And they really wanted to try and create level two opportunities for Henry in this game. Did a great job with it, by the way, too. Henry himself had some missed tackles, but he also just avoided people, outran people for extra yardage. 1.98 heavies per play. So Andrews played 42% of the snaps, likely 54, Ricard 54, and Kolar 49. Very balanced play. Of course, likely, even though he snapped, Andrews got no targets in the game, where Andrews got 5 for 44. So there's been some back and forth there between those two in terms of who's the primary.
Yeah, and if we have a Kolar there at 49%, with that injury, I'm interested to see how they kind of fill that void. We talked about that a little bit earlier, but that's I'm hoping there's no drop off, but I think people might realize that they have a different appreciation for Charlie Kolar once he's not in the fold.
By the way, absolutely great point there, because the Ravens have been the heaviest team in football again, despite, they're a monk and they're an 11 offense. They're really not. Yeah. They're still a 12, 21, 22 offense and play relatively little 11 in total. But what they if you look at snap count before the season started and you want to play 2.00 per play, which I thought was about what they would do, it's hard to see how any of those four guys would really be happy with their playing time. But yeah, Now with only three of them, they may be all playing too much. You know, they'll have to play two thirds of the snaps essentially to get 2.00 per play when they want to, when they really want to run the ball down the throat. So it's going to require another tight end, or the other possibility is extensive use of a sixth offensive lineman. They might go to, if they're running the ball, you might see Ben Cleveland 8 snaps a game all of a sudden.
Yeah. Yeah, and he hasn't been playing very much.
No, very little.
We'll talk about the O-line a little bit later, but that is something that's kind of tailed off in the last few weeks or 2 weeks, it seems.
Last thing I'll say is the Ravens had a very disappointing number of MTFs for the game in total. They had 7 in this game. The Chargers, one of the really bad tackling teams in the league. Particularly their level two guys, their linebackers are terrible tacklers. Their safeties actually are good tacklers, which is a little bit of a weird situation. To only pin 7 MTFs on a team like that when you run at them, the entire game is just not particularly impressive. And the Ravens are a team that has had way more MTFs forced than the opponents. So it's something that their offense, their natural tendency is to generate a lot of missed tackles forced, and they weren't able to impose their will on the Chargers in that particular way. Now, I'm not saying the run game didn't work. It did. The receivers didn't throw in any MTFs as they might have.
That's got to be rare for Zay Flowers also, with how shifty he is. But not having a drop, I mean, we mentioned the Bateman thing. I don't know what you'd call that play in the end zone. But that is key, especially for someone like Bateman, just because that's kind of been an issue for him in the past.
All right, Joe, just a pleasure talking football with you. I'm definitely going to have you on again, my friend. Tell folks, if they want to, where can they talk football with you online? Or maybe how do they just call into the radio station?
Okay, if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at @Joe_LaCroix. Going to be 2 underscores in there. Even though Twitter's search function is kind of odd sometimes. I don't know what that's about. You have to bring that up with Elon Musk. But you can either do that or call me, 410-583-1057, or text. That's the same number, too. You can reach me that way. But now give us a call. We do take a lot of calls compared to some of the other shows on the station. We do take a lot of calls. So especially in the 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock hours, that's the best way to get on the show. But I will also say, stay on topic. Don't call me during Maryland. We're talking Terps basketball and you want to break down Zay Flowers not having any missed tackles.
That's good. That's good advice there. What's the longest anybody ever has to hold to be on air? I don't want to put you on the spot here, but
it really depends on the day. I mean, when we do, we have our specific show after Ravens games called Monday Morning Quarterback. That's just wall to wall Ravens. might wait a little bit longer then, just because we don't have as many call segments planned, and you're going to get a lot more calls, especially if they lose. You know, lines are going to be jacked, but we try to get you on there and in as quickly as possible. I mean, I know some people don't believe that, but we don't like to really keep people on hold for longer than like 5 or 10 minutes. If that's going to be the case, I'll just get back on the phone and tell you to call back when we can get you right in there.
All right, Joe. Great having you on. Other folks out there, please hit me up if you got an idea for a short podcast coming up on the bye week. It's an excellent time to do one or two more. Hit me up. All I really want from you is about 3 bullet points on your idea and something can be talked about in 20 minutes. So Joe just talked about staying on point, kind of a focused sliver we can talk about, because the whole point of this is to provide some shorter content to people who won't listen to Film Study normally because it's an hour per show often. And I'm trying to, you know, get new people introduced to the show. Anyway, really appreciate you folks. Joe, thanks for coming on.
No, thanks for having me, Ken. This was great, man. I really enjoyed it.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.